Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the E2G Sports Network, home of the unsung sports grid. Visit us at E2GSports.com and follow us across the socials for up-to-the-minute sports news. This podcast is the property of E2G Sports, LLC. Now, it's time for the show.
Well, after the walk, it'll be Marcello at second, Medeiros on first. The pitcher comes set. Marcello and Medeiros extend their leads. Here's the pitch. Runners go. The pitch is a ball throw down to third, and he's safe. Medeiros down to second, and they've done it. It's the Double Steal Baseball Show with Robert Marcello and Adam Medeiros.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Double Steal Baseball Show on the E2G Sports Network. We are the unsung sports grid. My name is Adam Medeiros, and we have a very, very special show for you today because we are reintroducing and welcoming back Robert Marcello to the show. He's finished up his gig down in Virginia. So, Robert, welcome back. How have things been, man?
Thanks, Adam. Glad to be back, and glad to be back, Brad, with you as well. So looking forward to getting things started up again here.
Yeah, you have any exciting stories, any events or anything while you're down there calling baseball games in Virginia?
Well, definitely from Massachusetts to moving to Virginia was a whirlwind. I've never really broadcasted a game outside of New England, so that took some time, for change and having to talk a little bit differently because, you know, with my Massachusetts accent, it wasn't appreciated much, in the more southern part of the country, but I'm glad, to be back. And I wouldn't say anything memorable necessarily happened. Unfortunately, the team that I was calling games for didn't have a very successful season. So we had a couple of good memories, but nothing to write home about.
Yeah, it's still an awesome experience that you get to go down there and call some actual baseball games. And so unfortunately, with Robert coming back, we had to get rid of Brad, right? Oh, no, Brad, I'm just kidding. Brad's still here. Brad, how you doing, brother?
Hey, not too bad. Thanks, and welcome back, Robert. It's nice to be able to clasp the joint back again. Adam and I were holding down the fort while you were gone, but I think things got a little bit messy. It'd be nice for you to come back and clean things back up, and I look forward to a nice, crisp, clear show going forward. Exciting times in baseball too. You missed a lot of exciting stuff, and I know you were aching to get back, but we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about tonight, so I'm super pumped about that.
Let's go.
Yeah, and Robert, I wish you were here last week for the trade deadline, but we will get into a little bit of those moves that were made last week when we had an awesome show, had some breaking news right on the show with Max Scherzer being traded to the Dodgers. So that was a lot of fun. Would have loved to have you last week, but we got you this week and moving forward. So we're time to move into the three-headed show instead of just the Adam and Robert or the Adam and Brad show. So we'll moving forward, we'll have some great shows. If you'd like to join us today, the phone number to call in is 516-387-1702. Give us a follow on Twitter. We are at Double Steal E2G. And please visit the website, e2gsports.com, for all of your sports articles, and you can find a link to the podcast there. So let's get started. Let's go down to the American League East. The Tampa Bay Rays are 65-44. They are now in first place after a huge tumble here by the Boston Red Sox, who now sit at 64-46. They did lose today, so they are now a game and a half back of Tampa Bay. The New York Yankees are 58-49. They are six games back. And Brad, last week, if you'll remember, I said it might be time to take the Blue Jays off the list. Well, nope, not anymore. Not anymore. The Toronto Blue Jays are 56-49, and they are only seven games back. I believe last week, Brad, when we were on the show, they were 10 to 11 games back, and in just a seven-day span, not even necessarily a seven-game span, but just in the last 7 days, they've gained 3.5 games on the top team in the American League East. Looking at some current scores that are going on right now as well, the Seattle Mariners and the New York Yankees are tied 2-2 in the top of the fifth, so we'll keep an eye on that game. They're playing in New York, and also the Blue Jays are up 2-0 on the Indians in the top of the sixth inning. So just looking at some of the big storylines here in the American League East, obviously the Rays retaking the lead in the division. They swept Boston in a three-game series just this past week. The Red Sox are just in a straight-up tumble right now. They can't stop themselves from losing, and this comes right out, you know, right off the heels of the trade deadline. So the Red Sox are now 1-5 since last Thursday. They went from being a game and a half up to now a game and a half back. And also, all of that lead that they had on the Yankees and on the Blue Jays has suddenly gone up the wayside. The Rays went 5-2 in the last week. The Yankees went 5-2, and the Jays went 6-1. So that's a lot of information where it really looks like the Rays, the Yankees, and the Jays are moving up, and the Red Sox are just, like I said, in a full tumble here. So, Robert, let me start with you. I want to get some of your thoughts here on the American League East. What's wrong with the Red Sox?
I think what's wrong with the Red Sox, and it's dated all the way back to the trade deadline, really, the organization has let this team down. All July long, they were talking about getting starting pitching, and the trade deadline came around, and they didn't get any starting pitching. So it's concerning, and then all the other teams in our division got better. So, well, our division, you know, I don't want to act like a homer here, but we are Red Sox fans here. So I could say, you know, our division, but the Red Sox division, everybody got better, and it's just it's been a rough week for the Red Sox, and the problem is they're losing to teams that they probably should be. This Tampa team is very good, but they're nowhere as good as they were last year. And with all the pitching that they had, this team is not as good as they were last year. The Red Sox, of course, I mean, I don't even think they won 25 games last year in the shortened season. So to have the turnaround that they've had this year is fine and all and dandy. And I put it in the agenda that we typed up, you know, prior to coming onto the show, that even though this Red Sox starting rotation is a little stable, stable isn't going to win you in the postseason, and stable is not going to win you a World Series. And when you're in a city like Boston or you're in a city like New York, you know, being average just isn't good enough. And this starting pitching staff is very average. And then you have the offense, which just, you know, just before I came back from Virginia last week was flying on all cylinders. And then it's now really gone down. And we saw in the Rays series where they had multiple guys they left on base, and than today in Detroit where they got blown out in the last game of the series. So the Red Sox are going to quickly have to turn around, but I think what's wrong with them is they're starting pitching. It just simply has to be more consistent.
Yeah, and usually their hitters are what kind of kept them together. Even just looking at their runs scored on the season, they've got 536, which right now is third just in the American League East. So at one point they had the best record in the American League. They've fallen down a little bit. And I do completely agree with you on your point about the pitching. It felt like that was a big need. Martin Perez hasn't been great. Garrett Richards has been awful. And they really needed some help in that division. Just to kind of be a devil's advocate, though, they do have Chris Sale coming back, and I wonder if that played a factor in their decision not to go out and get any starting pitching at the deadline. I also felt like they could have used the first baseman. They went and got Kyle Schwarber, who is hurt, so I guess it still kind of remains to be seen what his impact is. And, Brad, just want to get some of your thoughts as well on what's wrong with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean – if we take just zoom out a little bit, I mean, the Red Sox still have the, you know, the third best record in the American League. Okay, they're in a little bit of a short-term skid here, but they've had an excellent season, and unfortunately for them, so have the Tampa Bay Rays, right? And so they would be leading or contending in any other division as well. And yeah, they're in a little bit of a skid. I'm not as willing to doom and gloom the Red Sox as much as you all, but I understand as homers, you know, and then having grown up in Mass and just moved out of Boston, having lived there the last 4 years, how much we do put pressure on that team. I do want to move over to my Toronto Blue Jays as well, because I really like their positioning at this moment. They look to be ready to leapfrog the Yankees, and they're about to enter a four-game series with the Red Sox coming up this weekend, Friday night game, a doubleheader on Saturday. I would attend either of those games myself, and also the game on Sunday as well. I think if the Blue Jays can take three out of four, that they really position themselves for a for an exciting and they really jazz themselves up. I mean, if you got to remember, too, with the Blue Jays, they've been playing at a visitor stadium all year, right? They weren't allowed to travel back into Canada. They've just returned back to the Rogers Centre, their true home stadium. So that's got to give them a little bit of a boost. And now, you know, you got the fledgling Red Sox, although I still feel like they're a significantly strong team. But, you know, here's a moment. Here's their moment where they could really make a statement. They've got a lot of games against a team that's hurting right now and could really make a move in this division. And so I'm excited for this game. That would be my not to blow it too early, but that would be my golden ticket match for the weekend, would be the Blue Jays Red Sox doubleheader. I thought I'd go to either one, but as I sit and think about it, how exciting it's going to be, I'd go to both, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, and that's a huge series coming up, right? I mean, if they, like you said, if they take 3 out of 4, or they even end up taking sweep the series or something like that, with how hot they've been and with how bad the Red Sox have been over the last week. I mean, you're talking about the Blue Jays jumping right up into the wild card conversation. They're only 3 games out of a wild card spot right now, and they're 5.5 games behind the Red Sox for the top wild card spot. So this is that's a huge series. It's a great pick to be Brad's golden ticket matchup. We are working on a golden ticket matchup sounder. Hopefully it will be a little bit cooler than the siren that we have for the breaking news. But we'll be working on getting a golden ticket matchup sounder. And, you know, just want to move down very quickly to the Yankees, Brad. I'll start with you. Last week we talked about how the Yankees, we weren't really sure if the additions of Rizzo and Gallo were enough to make up the ground that the Yankees had lost to that point. And I believe last week when we were on the show, they were 8.5 games back of the Boston Red Sox in that division. Now they're 6 games back of the Tampa Bay Rays, and we're only talking about a week span, right? That's just only in the past week they've gained 2.5 games and even more than that on the Red Sox with how far they've fallen. So Gallo hasn't been great. He's only got 2 hits in 5 games, and that doesn't include the game that's ongoing right now. But Anthony Rizzo's just been an absolute monster since he came over. The guy's hitting home runs. He's got a ton of RBIs, a ton of runs scored. I think his OBP since joining the Yankees is somewhere over 500. It's just astronomical. So wanted to ask you, Brad, has your opinion changed already from last week on the Yankees' deadline moves not being enough for them to challenge for A, the division, or B, even just to catch the Red Sox?
Look, this is a great question. I mean, you know, I'd love to change my opinion there. They're 9 games over 500 as it stands, right? So while they're underperforming this season, they're still having a good season. Just like with the Red Sox, unfortunately, they're in a division with the Red Sox and the Rays, who have two of the top 3 records in the American League.
Right.
So, yep. What's with them, right? So what do you do with Rizzo and Gallo? I think you've added yourself perhaps 2.5 to 4 additional wins. But look, they're 6 games behind. So I don't think that gets – and 5 games behind the Red Sox. 6 games behind the Rays, 5 games behind the Red Sox. Even with 4 additional wins on what they were expected to finish out at 9 games over 500 already, I just feel like they're playing their best ball. That said, the last 2 games, they scored 23 runs. They were playing the Orioles, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But
yeah,
they did – that's a lot of runs. What's really been disappointing for me for the season for them, as I zoom out, and we could, you know, look at Stanton and Judge, et cetera. The 21 games that Gerrit Cole's pitched this season, they're 10 and 11. So that's really where the difference is made up in my mind, because Gerrit Cole should be a lock. They should at least have a winning record. And if you ask me to get my best bet after 21 games started by Gerrit Cole, how many of those games have the Yankees won? I would say at least 15. But being 10 and 11, that's 5-game difference. That really kind of takes them out of the mix. That said, they're still 9 games over 500. The AL East is a tough division. 4 of these teams have winning records. So does it help their playoff chances in my mind? I think we can go down to the rest of the division and figure that out, right? Could they grab that second wild card spot? Maybe the Red Sox keep their slide. Maybe get that might put them in a better position. But honestly, I don't think.
Okay. And then, I like those points. The way that I'm looking at this is where the Red Sox really didn't do anything. So they didn't add any of those wins, right? Like we were kind of talking about when you add people like Gallo and Rizzo to the Yankees, they're adding estimated wins or projected wins, whatever, the war stat, right? They're adding wins to the end of the year, and the Red Sox just didn't do anything, which was kind of disappointing in my opinion. Again, still don't know if it'll be enough to close that gap. And Robert, I'd like to ask you as well, what did you think about the Yankees' moves at the deadline? Did you think the Gallo and Rizzo trades were good enough to potentially pass Tampa Bay or Boston in the standings? Because they're obviously making this run to at least get a wild card spot.
Yeah, and Adam, that's a good question. And this is honestly a tough question. And I was thinking about this before the show, you put on the agenda, this question. And I was thinking about it, and prior to Gerrit Cole being diagnosed with a positive COVID test, I'd say yes. Now the pitching for the Yankees, all of a sudden, since the news has came down with Gerrit Cole, they brought a hoist of these minor league pitchers up where they've been stashing in the organization for the past 2 or 3 years. Now they're bringing them up, and they've had an instant impact. So I think that the Yankees, the moves that they made at the deadline did help them. And the Gallo trade didn't really make sense to me at the time. Now it somewhat does due to, the left, handed power that they need, and it's been lacking in their lineup all year long. And then the Rizzo signing or the Rizzo trade to acquire him makes total sense because of their need at first base, due to the fact that Luke Voit just can't stay healthy. He's yet another one of these Yankees guys where they're only hitting for power. They strike out 120, 150 times a year, and they're hurt for, 50% of the games. And it aligns with Aaron Judge, and it also aligns with Giancarlo Stanton. So hopefully Rizzo nor Gallo fall into that category, but I think the Yankees are back in it. And this just comes down to the fact the Red Sox and the Rays, both of them have been losing. And the Rays, they've had their struggles this year against Seattle, and the Red Sox now have had their struggles. They had their struggles in the middle part of May, too. So both of these teams, the Red Sox and the Rays, could have put the Yankees to bed early by the All-Star break. They didn't, and now the Yankees are coming up, and I'm concerned about the Yankees potentially making a push late in the year. If you're a Red Sox and a Rays fan, you should be very concerned.
Yeah, I definitely can. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that the Yankees are coming. They're they got the big series against Seattle, and if they can win that series, then the Yankees are going to have some momentum. And the Red Sox and the Yankees see each other a bunch of times, and the Rays and see the Yankees a bunch of times too. So anytime you're playing in your division, it's going to be concerning. And of course, the Red Sox, they have their big series in Canada this weekend, and then the Yankees, of course, have their huge series against Seattle. So two really good matchups this weekend in the American League that have plenty of playoff implications.
Yeah, I wanted to just say that I thought that was a great point. The Gallo trade, they just went out and grabbed two power left-handed bats. That was pretty much the whole point of what they were trying to do. They were very right-handed hitting, heavy lineup. And adding those two guys, even though Gallo hasn't particularly played well so far at the plate, Rizzo's been huge, and it'll be interesting to see moving forward how much of a difference that a guy like Anthony Rizzo will make in that lineup if he can continue this production, which realistically it doesn't seem like he'll be able to continue at that pace, but it certainly helped at least in the short term. So just want to take a look ahead at the American League East and see who some of these teams are coming up with in the next week. So Tampa Bay's got 3 games at Baltimore, followed by 3 games at Boston. So that'll be a huge series against the Red Sox. The Red Sox lost today in a rubber match with Detroit, so they do fall back another half game there. And now they start a tour of the American League East. So they play 4 series in a row starting tomorrow, as Brad was saying, against each of the American League East teams. So 4 straight series, going 3 at Toronto, as Brad mentioned, and they'll end the week with 3 against Tampa Bay. So this is a very sneaky big week for the Red Sox. You can't afford to lose these games to Toronto and Tampa Bay, especially with how poor they've been playing lately. The Yankees, as Robert mentioned, 4 games at home against Seattle, and then they finished that up this week with 3 at Kansas City, and the Blue Jays, 4 against Boston, and 3 games at the Angels. So let's move now down to the American League Central. We have the Chicago White Sox, who are 63-45. And right at that 10 games behind limit is the Cleveland Indians, who have suddenly fallen off. They are 52-53, falling a game behind, a game under 500. They are now 9.5 games back. So there's pretty much going to be a time, maybe in the next week or so, where we don't even really need to look at this division much anymore. The White Sox are running away with it. They only have the 4th best record in the American League, but the other 4 teams, the Indians, the Tigers, the Royals, and the Twins, have just been dreadful, and they cannot catch the Chicago White Sox. So I really don't want to spend too much of our time here, especially with how much we were kind of focusing on the American League East. But I do want to add this one question that I'll propose to both of you. So, Brad, are the Minnesota Twins, who are now 45-63, who many people, including myself, had at least making the playoffs this year heading into the season. They're 18 games back of the White Sox. They basically sucked from day one. Are they the most disappointing team in baseball this season?
You know, I struggle to say yes to that, and here's why. I think the most disappointing team in baseball this season, when we fast forward to the end of the season and look back, in my opinion, will be the Chicago Cubs, particularly because they got to this point in the season and then decided to sell off their entire franchise to the rest of the major leagues. But that said, the expectations for the Twins this year were really high. Look, as a Massachusetts native, I'm a huge fan of Rocco Baldelli and his enthusiasm for that team. And you know as well as I do, having played in fantasy leagues together for the last 15 years, but over the last 3, I've drafted Byron Buxton and have been holding on to him every single year. And gosh, I really wish he could play a consistent season, because he's been down with injury every year I've had him. And every year he's been in the majors. And when he plays, he's awesome. And this year, it really looked like he was putting it all together. Speed, agility, offense, defense, power to all sides of the field. But we're not seeing him, have the opportunity to play again this year. I really feel like if you're a Twins fan, that's probably how you feel, because you came into the season with high expectations. As I zoom out and take a look at the rest of Major League Baseball, I think that the Chicago Cubs were the most baffling and might be the largest disappointment from having the expectations riding so high, not meeting those expectations, or maybe partially meeting them, and then deciding to sell, their entire World Series championship team from a few years ago to the rest of the majors. But I put the Twins up there as one of the most disappointing teams. Yes.
Okay. And Robert, do you agree, or is there another team that I'm missing? I personally think that the Twins are the most disappointing team, so I'd like your opinion as well.
I think there's 2, and I agree with you about Minnesota. Another disappointing team is the Atlanta Braves. I thought the Atlanta Braves were a top 2 team in the NL. They've been really disappointing this year. And even before Ronald Acuna was hurt, they were struggling. So I agree with you on the Twins, but I also put the Braves in that category as well.
Yeah, and with the Braves, it's actually kind of funny. We'll be visiting the NL East and take a look at that division in a few minutes. But they are a very disappointing team. It just for me with the Twins, the Twins for me, I think I had them finishing just behind the White Sox. And, right now I would kind of assume that they'd have about 62 wins somewhere in that range. And they have 45, which is unreal.
In our preseason predictions, sorry for cutting you off.
That's okay. Yeah.
We both had in the playoffs in both of our preseason predictions just before the season starting. So I completely agree. Minnesota's been a disappointment.
Yeah, and even the Chicago White Sox, they're sitting at 63-45. They're obviously going to win this division. They're the only team that'll make it to the playoffs in this division. And I don't feel too confident about them either. They just haven't been playing great, I would say. But at the same time, there isn't really one of those teams right now in the American League who really stands out as kind of the, you know, the alpha, like the team to beat. So, you know, Chicago makes the playoffs, and with that new stacked bullpen they got when they acquired Craig Kimbrel and added Kimbrel to that, to, you know, to the back end of that bullpen, I think the White Sox might be kind of a force to be reckoned with at the end of the year. The other big issue with the White Sox was all the injuries they suffered this season. So, I think if all those guys were healthy, maybe we're looking at the White Sox right now as the best team in the American League, but they lost a ton of guys and a ton of young players, a ton of old players, guys like Grandal's been out, then they lost Jimenez, and they lost Robert. So Nick Madrigal, unbelievable how many guys that they've had go on the DL, and all of a sudden they're at least still going to make the playoffs and win this division. So let's move down now to the American League West. Oh, I'm sorry. Someone have a point? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, just looking back at the trade moves, they made a sneaky good move. Getting Kimbrel, I mean, what they said to themselves and what they looked out the strength of their rest of schedule, they looked out at the rest of where the division's sitting and the disappointments in the rest of the division. They said, okay, we are going to make the playoffs. So assuming that to be true, how do we want to position ourselves to be in a better position? And they said, well, when you get to playoff games, what is one of the key aspects of the heat of the moment playoff games? And that's a deep pitching staff. And they went out and acquired, they have one of the best closers in the majors, and they went out and got another one in Kimbrel.
Yep.
Right. So they've basically put themselves into the playoffs in their mindset with this move. And they have strengthened their playoff strength, right? They don't necessarily need to be playing firing on all cylinders for the rest of the season. They got 10 games up on the second place team. They're going to win this. They're going to coast into this division. But man, did they just really make a move to be a potential surprise here in the playoffs. And I'm excited about that for them.
So yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you. I just going back to my old point, I really wish those guys didn't get hurt. I would have loved to see what this White Sox team with their full arsenal here. But it was just injury after injury after injury. And they've still maintained a 10-game lead here in the division. So, you know, kind of good for them. But let's move to the West. So the Houston Astros, 65-43. They're in first place in the West. The Oakland Athletics are 61-48. They're 4.5 games back, and the Seattle Mariners, 58-51. They are just 7.5 games back. And just kind of looking over too at the wild card standings, because I'm very interested to see if Seattle can end up creeping into the playoffs. Seattle right now is 3 games back of the Athletics for that second wild card spot. So they're still alive, which is great. I love to see that the Seattle Mariners is still alive. But the big storyline here is in the last week, from where we were last week's show, Oakland gained a game and a half on Houston. And the other huge story out of this division was the Houston Astros at the LA Dodgers, which was just an absolute joy to watch, in my opinion, just to watch those Dodgers fans kind of get to see the Astros come back in after that whole trash can cheating scandal where the Astros beat the Dodgers in the World Series. So, this is the first time that the Astros got to go into LA with fans in the stands, because obviously that was wiped out last season, and those fans gave it to the Houston Astros. And I thought it was an absolutely great, great series. So there really wasn't much movement here, but in the division, other than that 1.5 game gain that Oakland had on Houston, the real takeaway for me though, and something that I kind of want to focus on with the American League West, was that Astros Dodgers game. It was just a 2-game set. They ended up splitting the 2 games, which is cool, but watching the Dodgers fans just kind of lay into and throwing trash cans on the field. And I thought it was kind of one of those fun car crashes to watch, right? Like just a total chaotic mess. And I love seeing that. So Robert, I'll start with you. What did you think about the crowd's reaction to the Astros coming to LA?
Well, I put in when you posed the question earlier today, just for us to think about, I thought that it was appropriate for the most part. The Astros knew this was coming at some point when they went to New York. It happened when they've gone to other places. I don't think it really happened in Boston, but if it did, I'm not really sure. Some of these ballparks they're going to go to, they're not hiding from anybody. When the playoffs come around and hopefully, potentially, they come to Boston if the Red Sox were able to, you know, hold on and come back and win the division, or the Astros somehow get into that first spot in the AL and the Red Sox win the wild card game or whatever happens. It'd be interesting to see. But, yeah, I think at any time you have a situation where you're going back to a place where they don't really like you, in the Astros, that's basically all 29 ballparks. And I thought for the most part it was pretty good. The Dodgers fans definitely have a gripe. You know, they felt like the World Series championship was taken away from them. But I don't think they went too far where it was, you know, completely egregious, where they were hitting, you know, players with beer bottles or, you know, throwing baseballs back into the stands. I don't think the Astros have to worry about that. But I like the, you know, the fun jokes, the trash cans and stuff. It's pretty funny.
And Brad, just want to ask you too, we've talked about this a little bit on previous shows, kind of that good for the game type of thing, right? Do you think that this sort of attention where there's eyeballs watching this, right, because of the crowd reaction, not necessarily the game on the field, because, you know, I don't think the fans really, I mean, they want their team to win. The Dodgers fans wanted the Dodgers to win, but it was more about their opponent and what that opponent represented, right? Is that type of negative attention, is that good for the game? Is it exciting to watch baseball fans be passionate about the sport, or is bringing the cheating scandal to light again perhaps bad for baseball, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it looked bad for Major League Baseball, but Major League Baseball took this invited this upon themselves, in my opinion. And you know, I've been a pretty I've taken some more extreme positions on how I think they react very slowly or not enough or not at all in cases that damage the integrity of the game. This is one of them where they decided at the end of the day that no one deserved punishment because or significant punishment because it was probably going on elsewhere. So now the fans have to do what MLB didn't. Unfortunately, I think that looks bad from the perspective of justice. As a Dodgers fan, I feel happy from a Major League Baseball standpoint for the brand of the game, for me trying to bring my kids to the game. I don't think it does. That said, it wasn't all the Dodgers fans, right? There's at most a handful of people that are willing to throw a baseball onto a field or, you know, get themselves kicked out of a game because the team that they cheer for didn't win a World Series. But I didn't like to see what happened in that game personally, and I thought it was more damaging to Major League Baseball. But I think it was avoidable if Major League Baseball took the stance that they should have taken at the time they should have taken it, in my opinion. But moving past that just a little bit. I think the Astros are the best team in the majors. In the American League. I think they're the strongest team. I wouldn't rule out seeing those two teams play again in the playoffs, more specifically in the World Series. I think there's a really good chance of that. Bregman's coming back in a couple of weeks. I know Verlander's ruled out for the year, but I think Bregman's coming back soon. And they've already got a pretty strong team without him, and he's going to add a lot of firepower. So I think the Astros have a lot of good to look forward to from that standpoint. They'll speak by their performance on the field going forward, and that's how I hope, if the Dodgers and the Astros do meet again, that that's how justice or not plays itself out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that would be a wild World Series, wouldn't it? The Astros and the Dodgers again, especially after what just happened this weekend. I mean, I'm kind of torn on it. I also kind of agree that it goes a little bit too far when people are throwing stuff onto the field. But at the same time, I still love to see that passion from fans who are genuinely pissed off that they felt that their team was cheated out of a World Series win, right? I mean, it was 2017, I believe. The Dodgers felt like they were cheated out of a World Series championship, and to have those passionate fans kind of giving it to the Astros now that this is the first time the Astros have gone into the Dodger Stadium and they've been able to kind of heckle them and say their piece, but the Astros still managed to split it. Another thing too that happened in that series was Max Scherzer's first game, and we'll get to that one a little bit later on when we talk about the National League West. So I do want to look ahead in the American League West. The Houston Astros have 3 games against the Twins and 3 games against Colorado, all at home. So this is a very winnable pair of series coming up for Houston in the next week. Oakland, on the other hand, who's 4.5 games back, they have 3 against Texas and 3 at Cleveland. So another 2 series that are very winnable for the Athletics. The Seattle Mariners, on the other hand, have 3 that we were just talking about in the American League East when we did that breakdown. They have 3 games against the Yankees, which is taking place tonight. So that's a little bit of a tougher road that the Seattle Mariners will have to go on, especially while the Astros and Athletics are kind of playing that very winnable 4 series between the two of them. So that's going to be my golden ticket matchup of the week, is the Seattle Mariners 3 games at the Yankees. And just another little score update here. It's the bottom of the 6th in New York, 2-2, Mariners and Yankees. So that is my golden ticket matchup of the week, because I feel like this is a very important series for not just for the Yankees, who need to keep rolling, but for the Mariners, who are really trying to make a push and get themselves into that wild card picture. So the phone number here to call into the show, if anyone would like to do so, 516-387-1702. And we will now move down to the National League East, which all of a sudden has gotten a little bit more interesting than it's been in the last few weeks. The Mets here are really starting to sweat. They're starting to sweat bullets because they went out and made a bunch of moves, right? They went and got Javier Baez from the Cubs. They got Rich Hill from the Tampa Bay Rays. So they definitely tried to improve the team. But as of now, it has not reflected in the standings. They've gone 2-5 in the last week, while the Phillies, on the other hand, have all of a sudden vaulted themselves. They're not in a tie. They do have one more loss, but they are 56-53 right now after their win today. So the Phillies now are a half game back. They're winners of five in a row, which makes them the hottest team in baseball right now. And there's a very real chance that we'll be seeing the Phillies overtake the Mets for the first time this year, I believe, for the top spot in the National League East. So we do all of a sudden have a kind of a race here, right? I also don't want to leave out the Braves, who just dating back maybe last week or the week before that, they were somewhere around 5 games out of first place with the Mets. They're now 54-54, and they're only 2 games back. So we very quickly here in the National League East got a 3-team race. We've got the Mets, the Phillies, and the Braves. So the Phillies went out. They traded for Kyle Gibson from Texas, which is definitely going to help with their pitching depth. The Braves, on the heels of losing Acuna for the season, they went out and acquired Eddie Rosario, Adam Duvall, Jorge Soler, and closer Richard Rodriguez from Pittsburgh Pirates. So the Braves went out and made moves. The Phillies went out and made moves. The Mets went out and made moves. So, Brad, I want to ask you, how does the landscape look now moving forward for the Mets, who seem to be in a bit of a slide while the Phillies are the hottest team in the league?
If I'm the Mets, I'm shaking in my boots right now.
Yeah.
The Phillies just won a game against the Nationals, scoring 4 runs in the top of the 9th. They're pumped. And they've got a little bit of a momentum here. And the Mets are staring down. So the Mets haven't played anyone from the NL West yet this year, which I know we'll talk about a little later. But the Mets have 13 straight games against the Dodgers and Giants coming up soon. And that is not going to be a very fun set for them, in my opinion. I expect them to win 4 at most, honestly. So that's going to not be a very good trajectory. That's not a good trajectory for them, in my opinion. So if I'm the Mets, I'm shaking in my boots. I expect to see some shakeup in these standings in the short term.
And Robert, just want to get your opinion as well. What do you think about the National League East?
Well, I think the National League East by far is the worst division in baseball. But that being said, you know, you have 3 teams buying for 1 spot likely in the playoffs. That second place team I don't believe is going to get in as a wild card. I think all 3 NL West teams that are competing right now for that division title are all going to get into the playoffs. So only one spot's really going to be open in the NL East. And even though I said that Atlanta Braves have been a disappointment this year, they can turn it around within a week or so. They're only 2.5 games back, and you have the Phillies on the Mets tail. And the Mets, I felt like if the deadline got better, they acquired Javier Baez, which helped out their shortstop problem because Francisco Lindor was hurt, and Francisco Lindor's had a really bad year. Of course, when he comes back, Baez will move over to second, and that will be the best second-to-shortstop combo in the league. So shaking off the rust here a little bit, guys. I have been paying attention to baseball. Don't worry. It's been a little tricky, so my apologies to everyone listening tonight, and my apologies to you too. But don't worry, but next week we'll have it down pat. But I think the outlook overall in the NL East is what's going to happen with the Mets and what's going to happen with Jacob DeGrom, because they're unsure, you know, of Jacob DeGrom, and he's 100%. You know, there's been a couple of times this year where he's had to leave starts early. Noah Syndergaard, when's he going to come back? Is he even going to come back this year? Marcus Stroman, is he going to be the solid number two guy? You look at the Phillies, is Bryce Harper going to continue on this tear offensively? And then you have Atlanta, where Atlanta has all the makings of winning this division if they just put together a 6- or 7-game winning streak and the Phillies and Mets falter for 1 week. So NL East is interesting. And up until, I'd say, last week, I still even thought the Nationals had a chance. And then the Nationals, of course, they got rid of Schwarber to the Red Sox, and then Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Dodgers, and blew kind of their whole situation up, which I didn't really understand. And then that would be a conversation for maybe after the season or maybe later on in August or September. But overall in the NL East, it's going to be very competitive, and it's going to be an exciting last 6 or 7 weeks of the season.
All right, so I don't want to spring this on you guys, but a one-word answer, and we're going to start with Brad, right? One-word answer, Brad. Who wins the National League East, a prediction for the end of the year?
Phillies.
And Robert?
I think that the Mets are going to find a way to win that division, but I think the Braves are going to be the team that makes a strong push. I have a feeling that the Phillies are going to start to fade a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm also going Phillies. So very interesting. We'll have to see how that goes. But I just think the Mets, with their future schedule coming up ahead and with how hot the Phillies have been, I think the Phillies will end up taking it. But we all do kind of agree that even whoever comes out of this National League East isn't going to be making it too far in the playoffs, right?
No, I don't believe so. Whoever wins this division will likely play the Brewers. And the Brewers aren't that strong either. Even though the Brewers are a good team, they're similar to a lot of these NL East teams where they're not anything special. All it takes is one or two mistakes by a team in the playoffs and your season's over. So we'll see how it goes. I think the three best teams in the National League are all in the same division, and that's out in the West. I don't think the Brewers are good enough, and I don't think that the Mets, Phillies, or Braves are good enough either.
All right, so let's just do a little look ahead. I have the schedule here in front of me. So New York Mets, they have a 3-game series at the Phillies, right? We were just talking about this. The Mets and the Phillies are playing each other, with the Phillies just a half game back. And Robert, that's your golden ticket matchup of the week. So do you want to discuss that one a little bit?
Yes, I will. So that's, of course, and Adam, you mentioned that. That's a huge series, and you're absolutely right. It's going to be a battle of – you know, by the end of those three games, who is going to be, you know, in first place. And we saw that last weekend with the Red Sox in the Rays. So that will be a very good series. I'll be keen on that. And, of course, the pitching matchup and some of the line lights and some of the bigger players in the game. You got, you know, Bryce Harper and Rhys Hoskins and Didi Gregorius on the side of the Phillies. And then for the Mets, you know, you got Pete Alonso and you know, of course, Lindor, who's out hurt. But you have Baez, and then you have Michael Conforto, who's having a nice year, and pitching-wise, too, with Zach Wheeler, Jacob DeGrom. You know, of course, some of these guys out with injuries, some of them active. And, you know, it should be a good matchup. The Phillies and the Mets, I feel like for the past 15 to 20 years, have created a small little rivalry that's been under, you know, kind of ground a little bit, per se. But it should sprout up in this next matchup that they have.
Yeah, that's an absolutely huge series. So after the Mets play those three games at the Phillies, they play three at home against Washington. And then the big one that Brad mentioned, after they play Washington, they play 13 consecutive games against the Dodgers and the Giants. So that is an absolutely brutal stretch. And it does feel like after that stretch, we might be looking at the Mets maybe somewhere around 5, 6, 7 games back of whoever the leader is, which I do believe will be the Phillies. And also a very super important week is coming up for Philly. They've got those three games at home against the Mets. Then they go three games at home against the Dodgers. So it's not like it's a cakewalk for them. Now, if we look at the Braves, though, the Braves have three games at home against the Nationals, who are now on a four-game losing streak with the trade there of Turner and Scherzer. And then they go and play three games against the Cincinnati Reds, who are no slouch, but they're also not one of the stronger teams here in the National League. So perhaps the Braves have a little bit of a chance here to gain some ground, being only two games back of the first-place Mets. So let's move down to the National League Central. We have the Milwaukee Brewers, who are 65-44, and we have the Cincinnati Reds, who are 57-51. They are 7.5 games back. I do just want to quickly add the St. Louis Cardinals, 53-54. Another team that I thought one of you two might have had as a one of the top disappointing teams. They're 11 games back of the Brewers right now and starting to fall off. They've lost two straight. So the biggest storyline here in the National League Central is that the Brewers maintain their lead over the Cincinnati Reds while St. Louis continues to fall back. So as we've already mentioned on this show, it does look like the two wild cards will be coming out of the National League West. Whoever that wins the division and the other two teams will end up playing that one game play-in. We basically said that right from the start of the year that we felt when the Dodgers and Padres win this division, who knows if they will now, with the emergence of the Giants, the other two teams would end up playing as the wild card. But having said that, the Brewers do look like they're setting themselves up very similar to what the White Sox are doing over in the American League Central, right, where they've built a big lead and they can kind of just coast into the playoffs. And their real only threat here is Cincinnati, who's 7.5 games back. So they don't have too much of too much to fend off here as far as it goes for winning the division, and you have to win the division in order to make the playoffs. So Brad, do you have any thoughts on the Central?
No, not too much, Adam. I mean, the Brewers being 21 games over 500 is a little surprising to me. They got a strong pitching staff though, and a pretty decent offense. I don't expect them to go far in the playoffs personally, but I do feel like they can beat up on the rest of their division for the rest of the year. I like the Reds. I want to cheer for them. I think they're pretty far back at this point in the season to make any significant gains, right? They got to clear 8 games better than the Brewers for the remainder of the season, and that's going to be pretty tough. So they better hope they're playing the Pirates a lot more than the Brewers are. But outside of that, I think this division's pretty much set. It's got those AL Central vibes to me.
Yeah, and Robert, how about you?
In answer your question more or less, Adam, about kind of the outlook on the NL Central, similar to the outlook that we had on the AL Central, really is both the Brewers and the White Sox, they're both very strong teams, and all the other teams in their divisions just haven't played well. And, you know, just thinking about it now, you can add the St. Louis Cardinals to that, disappointing teams of this year, really, with the Nolan Arenado signing and with Goldschmidt.
Goldschmidt.
This is not good. I can't even say the name.
You got it.
Well, the first baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals.
It's all right.
Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt. He used to play for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Oh, yeah.
So, with him coming back and with Jack Flaherty after the year that he had, maybe coming back this year and being strong, and Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina and everything like that, you felt like they were the team to beat in the NL Central. Well, that's not the case. The Milwaukee Brewers have surprisingly had a good year, and they just keep coming for the past 4 or 5 years. Craig Counsell has a great coaching staff over there in Milwaukee, and they'll be a force to reckon with in the NL playoffs. But and I agree with Brad. I don't think they're strong enough, but they should be able to easily win the Central and coast their way through September.
All right, that's great. So let's move down now to the big division here, the powerhouse division, the National League West. The San Francisco Giants are now 69-40 after their win today. The Los Angeles Dodgers are 65-44, and the San Diego Padres come in at 62-48. So the Dodgers are now four games behind the San Francisco Giants, and the Padres are 7.5 games behind. So just looking at the last week, the Giants went 5-2, which they seem to do every week. The Dodgers went 3-3, and the Padres went 3-3. So very interesting. Right? Very interesting. We saw the Dodgers go out, pick up all these guys, pick up Scherzer, pick up Danny Duffy, pick up Trey Turner. And even in the the past week where we've had six games since that that trade deadline, the Giants are still outperforming them. And granted, they did go out and pick up Chris Bryant, which I thought was a fantastic move. You at least need to go out and make some sort of a counterpunch, right, to what the Dodgers did. And the Padres didn't do that, which is very concerning. So I do want to focus a little bit on the Dodgers and mainly focus on Max Scherzer. So he made his debut against Houston. He pitched 7 innings, allowed 2 runs, and had 10 strikeouts. So he's right basically in form with what he's been doing for the majority of his career here, where he's just one of the most dominant pitchers in the league. The problem for the Dodgers right now is obviously that Trevor Bauer is out on this administrative leave. We have Clayton Kershaw, who's been out since the middle of July. Pitchers like Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Danny Duffy are all out with injuries. The Dodgers also just recently went out and signed Cole Hamels because it feels like they're still worried about their pitching depth. So at the beginning of the season, coming into the year, everybody had the Dodgers as the clear-cut favorite. The Dodgers are winning the World Series. That's it. They signed Trevor Bauer, right? And we've gotten to this point, especially before last week, where we said, well, wait a minute. Kershaw's injured. Walker Buehler's been fantastic, so we can kind of put him aside. But Kershaw's been injured. Trevor Bauer got into this legal trouble and is on administrative leave for God knows how long that'll last for. We've had injuries to some of those key prospects, guys like Gonsolin, guys like Dustin May. And all of a sudden, the Dodgers don't have the depth in the pitching rotation that we thought they were going to have. So they go out and they trade for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, which immediately everyone says, well, looks like the Dodgers are right back to the number one team, but they cannot, for the life of them, catch the San Francisco Giants. And Brad, you and I talked about this a few weeks ago. We cannot figure out why the Giants are so good. Why are the Giants 29 games over 500? And it's an interesting question because they don't, on paper anyway, have really the strongest team, but they just continue to find a way to win games. And there's almost something magical, I guess, for lack of a better term. There's a team chemistry thing. There's a clutch factor. There's something there with the Giants. There's that intangible that is making the Giants what they are right now, which is the best team in baseball. So, Robert, I do want to start with you. You weren't here for the trade deadline show last week, so I do want to get your thoughts on this. What did you think about the Max Scherzer and Trey Turner deal to the Dodgers? Maybe what was kind of your initial reaction to the trade? And do you think that by the end of the year, those moves will be enough for the Dodgers to catch the Giants?
I fully expect the LA Dodgers to win the NL West, and I'll explain why. There was a middle part of the season. It was shortly after I left the show to go to Virginia, where for a week or two period, the Giants weren't playing their best baseball. And the Giants, you know, were in the situation where, you know, this is, you know, yet another year of, you know, a great start and it's going to fall off and maybe we make the playoffs. But it didn't happen that way. And the Dodgers didn't take advantage of it. But now with these trade acquisitions and now the Dodgers are going to get healthier and with Max Scherzer now there, Trey Turner's there. I'm not sure of the situation with him splitting time with Corey Seager now coming back from injury as well. So the Dodgers are in a weird situation, but I fully expect them to be on top of the NL West and another division title and be back in the postseason, having a long postseason run. The San Francisco Giants are going to be a very tough out in the postseason, though, because they have great pitching. And we all know what wins in the postseason is pitching. Even though the offense is so important, if you don't have good pitching, you're not going to win a World Series. And the Giants, in my opinion, have the best pitching staff in baseball because they can find different ways to win and they can piece together a great starting pitching staff and bullpen, and they can find ways to win. So even though I think the Dodgers are going to win their division, the San Francisco Giants have a shot to get to the World Series this year better than anybody in the National League.
Yeah, and Brad, I just want to focus over to you and kind of talk about the Giants a little bit. So we've been talking about how the Giants have been able to sustain their success at the top of the division here. It hasn't slowed down right from the start of the year, and they go out and they pick up Chris Bryant, as I mentioned before, from the Cubs, just to kind of bolster their lineup and maybe give them that household name that we had been talking about, that the Giants don't really have one of those big-time household names, right, that the average fan would recognize. So projecting out, I know you like to do your analytics and kind of project it out. Do you think that the Giants here will be able to hold on for dear life with this four-game lead as it stands right now with the, you know, 100 and whatever it is, what do we have, 109 games into the season for them? So they're looking at another 40-something games. Do you think that they hold on for dear life, or were the moves that the Dodgers made and the talent difference that the Dodgers have, do you think it's too much and the Dodgers will end up overtaking the Giants?
I think they have a great chance of doing that, Adam. And with Bryant coming over, I think that was awesome. I agree. That was a great acquisition. And they also rolled out the red carpet for him. I don't know if you saw what they did for him, but they basically, you know, when he arrived in San Francisco, they put him up at the nearest hotel, right? Because, I mean, these players are, they live in the areas that they play in, right? And then when they get traded in the midseason like this, it's like, imagine that happening to any one of us, just taking up a new job, being, you know, being purchased by another employer, moving to that place, and basically, you know, overnight. But they set him up. They had his kid with a Bryant jersey, Giants Bryant jersey already made up for him, perfectly fit. They had everything, just like a really good feel good situation. Given all kind of like the chaos, because you probably both saw how Bryant was pretty bummed about leaving Chicago, you know, and really wanted to. But that said, right, going back to like the stats and the baseball. Bryant's an everyday player, right? Scherzer's going to pitch for you every 5 days, right? And the Dodgers have a fantastic record already. So what's he going to add? He's going to add a little bit, right, marginally. Bryant's an everyday player who's going to continue to, you know, keep those close games close, you know, and have his once in a chance, really, really good, powerful games and kind of single-handedly help from an offensive standpoint. The play here in my mind is like, what's in the, you know, who's got the stronger playoff team, and you've really got this awesome, you've got this team of superstars in the Dodgers, right? The team with basically the unlimited checkbook, and you've got the Giants, who we've talked about are the oldest team in the majors, and they've, you know, it's going to be hard to break them, right? Hard for them to get the yips because they've got the tenure, they've got the experience. And gosh, they're having an awesome season in a really tough division.
Yeah, what's interesting to me too, Brad, it's funny that you kind of mentioned that whole thing about Chris Bryant. So Chris Bryant's a free agent at the end of the year. So we don't even really know if the Giants will be able to re-sign Chris Bryant. But for them to recognize kind of the situation, like, okay, we have the best record in baseball. Let's go make a move, right? Let's move some prospects. Let's go get Chris Bryant and let's make a run for this thing because they believed in their team. It was kind of the opposite of what the Red Sox did, in my opinion. The Red Sox looked at it and said, well, we're playing really well, so let's just kind of keep what we have, make a minor move in Kyle Schwarber. But the Giants were basically saying, no, we need to fend off these teams behind us. We need to maybe overpay if we need to and go get Chris Bryant, even if it's just a half-season rental, and maybe we'll be able to convince him to stay. So I do want to just look ahead and see where these teams are heading into schedule-wise for the rest of the year. I'm sorry, for the rest of this week leading into next week's show. So the Giants are finishing a four-game series today with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they did end up winning that game 5-4. They will play three games at the Brewers, which should be a very good series, the Giants at Milwaukee. Then they play two at home against Arizona again. Then they play four against Colorado. So they do have those three very difficult games there at Milwaukee, but then they finish up with six games against the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, who have just been dreadful. So maybe to end the week as we head into next Thursday's show, we'll see the Giants maybe on a little bit of a roll. The Dodgers, on the other hand, They have three games at home against the Angels. Then they played three games at Philly. So maybe a little bit of a tough stretch there, especially with how hot the Phillies have been. And San Diego, they have three games at home against the Diamondbacks, then three games at home against the Marlins. Then they go on the road and play the Diamondbacks and the Rockies. So we have a very, very winnable schedule here in the foreseeable future for, you know, the next 13, 14 games here for the Padres. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Padres kind of go on a little bit of a run in the next 2 weeks. And that might make for a very interesting kind of closing of the gap here for the Padres, because to be perfectly honest with you, if you're looking at the standings right now, I, before the season started, envisioned that the Padres and the Giants would be flipped in this scenario. I had picked the Padres to win the World Series this year, and I didn't really expect for them to be 7.5 games back of the Giants. I don't think anybody did. But if the Padres are going to make a move, it's going to have to be in the next 13, 14 days where they have very, very winnable games. And if they even don't win maybe 75% of those, right, they need to go something like 9-4. In those games, maybe even better than that. So do any of you have any thoughts on the kind of the week ahead for the National League West?
Yeah, that the Giants and Dodgers get to beat up on the Mets. I'm joking there. No, nothing key. I mean, what do we see? Do we expect, these standings to change when we talk again this time next week? I think no. Personally, I think these standings stay exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But let's see if, you know, either one of those teams, the Giants or the Dodgers, gets any lift. And if the Padres keep slipping, that might be the storyline we're talking about.
Yeah, and Robert, what do you think?
This might sound foolish, but I'm honestly a little worried about the Padres because, you know, just looking at the wild card standings right now, I mean, they're only four games up on the Reds, and the Reds last year we saw in the shortened season, they, you know, with 3 weeks left, I think they went maybe like 17-4, 17-3, and they can rattle off a bunch of games in a row. We saw it last year, and I personally believe that Cincinnati has a better team right now than they had last year with their roster. I'm not saying that their play is showing up, but their roster is much better than last year with the emergence of Jonathan India and a lot of their other guys there. Matt Lorenzen being a two-way player. You still have Joey Votto there and Nick Castellanos. So I'm concerned about the Padres because we're not sure what's going to happen with Fernando Tatis. And Fernando Tatis is the heart of that organization. They signed him for a 13-year contract, 14-year deal. So if I'm the Padres, I'm concerned too. But I think the Padres are going to be able to fend off the Cincinnati Reds and the Philadelphia Phillies, who are also behind them at 5.5 games. So I expect those three teams in the West to make the playoffs, and the week ahead it works well for the Padres in the fact where they have three against Arizona, three against Miami, and then four at Arizona, and that's three with the Rockies. I mean, you have to win every single one of those series. There won't be an excuse for a slip up. Then, of course, you have the Dodgers, who don't have exactly the easiest schedule. The Battle of LA, that's always going to give them problems, and then they have to go to Philadelphia, who's currently playing really well right now, and I think out of everybody, I think that the San Francisco Giants, besides the Padres, have an easier schedule. So for the Dodgers, I believe at the end of the season, the Dodgers are going to be able to right the ship, and they're going to get everybody back, and they're going to go on a 10-game winning streak, and somehow the Giants are going to lose three or four of those, and then the Dodgers will be right back in first place. But an interesting wild card matchup would definitely be the Giants and the Padres, and I think the Giants would take that matchup, and after the offseason the Padres would have, they'd be one or done. I'm very concerned about the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, and I think we'll see with these next 13 games, right, against kind of the bottom feeders here in the National League, the Padres have to win a good portion of those games. If they don't, even if they go 500 in these next 13 games, they might find themselves out of even contention for the NL West. So, and just before we go, I do want to update everybody on kind of the scores that are going on right now. So the Mariners have taken a 3-2 lead on the Yankees. They're in the bottom of the seventh. And it looks like the Blue Jays are about to wrap up. They actually just have. the Blue Jays shut out the Indians 3-0. So there's another win down there for the Blue Jays in the American League East, who are definitely creeping closer and closer to the Tampa Bay Rays and to a wild card spot. So if the Yankees don't hold on here, with this, they're down 3-2, they'll end up being tied with the Blue Jays. So we've got a little bit of a crunch going on here in the American League East, and it's kind of what we wanted, right? We wanted to have at least three of the four teams here in it, and right now it looks like we're going to have all four of them. So you guys have Brad, do you have any final thoughts before we call it a night? Oh, did I lose you, Brad? Robert, are you there?
No, I'm here. Adam. My words, Adam, is I'm happy to be back on the show, and happy to be back with you guys and you and Brad. And I appreciate you guys continuing to do the show while I was gone. I listened to a good amount of times, but on Thursday nights, of course, we have games. So therefore, I wasn't able to listen. But I tried to listen a little bit, and I called that one time. And maybe I tried to call another time. I'm not sure. But I'm excited to be back and doing this every single Thursday. And you know, this is the heart of the season. These are the dog days of July and August. We're sitting right here. So it should be exciting. And going back to even before we sign off here, the AL East, I think both the Eastern divisions with the NL and AL East are both the tightest divisions in baseball. And any of those teams that win have a shot to, go deep in the playoffs. And I think maybe less than the NL East, more than the AL. I think the AL has the stronger of the top three teams. But, you never know what happens in the postseason. So it should be an exciting last, 2 months. And, of course, the weaker, divisions, I think, are in the Central, but the AL and NL. And then, obviously, the tougher ones, the tougher one of the West is the NL, but the AL West and Adam, we didn't mention this. My Oakland A's are starting to fall off, and then that's not a good sign.
Yeah, we'll see if the Oakland A's can end up kind of kicking it back. It does look like they have a decent shot at the playoffs, so at least we'll get them in that that one game playoff if they don't end up overtaking the Astros, which it doesn't look like they will, but you never know. We still have a lot of baseball to play. So, Brad, I do think we have you back here, right?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, that's all right. So I just wanted to know if you had any other final thoughts before we sign off for the night.
Nope. One thing, excited about that Red Sox-Blue Jays series on Saturday. I think I'm going to post up and see if I can catch the doubleheader. I think it's going to be an exciting weekend for baseball. And again, I'm thankful for Robert coming back and rejoining us. So
excited for
the rest of this.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to echo that. Robert, I'm glad to have you back. I thought the show flowed really well today, even with you back. So, and I'm pretty sure that you said that you had tried to call in another time. I probably just hung up on you, to be perfectly honest with you. I probably saw Robert flashing on the screen. I was like, yeah, I'm not – I talked to that guy since January. We'll just hang up on them. So that'll do it for this episode of the Double Steel Baseball Show. Want to thank everybody who is listening to us live and who is listening to us on the archive show on blogtalkradio.com. You can also find us across a lot of the other podcast sites, some Apple Music, some Spotify. So please give us a listen there. And be sure to join us next Thursday starting at 8:30 Eastern Time. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will catch you next week.